books in your ears.
I love it.
While you're driving.
While you're riding your bicycle.
While you're on the toilet.
You mean anytime?
I wouldn't have thought of that toilet thing, but...
audibletrial.com/dream.
Free audible book of your choice.
And a free 30-day trial of their service.
audibletrial.com/dream.
A lot of times, we just build a new product. Or we build a new service. We create something. We don't bother to find out if anybody really wants it. It's time for another episode of the Grow the Dream Show. Today, we're going to be talking about how to find out from your customers whether your new product or service idea is worth doing or not. This is a show all about letting your market tell you what you need to know before you spend a whole bunch of money. All of that and lots more useful stuff today on the Grow the Dream Show.
Oftentimes, it's the ones that are successful loved what they did so they could persevere when, you know, when it got really tough. And the ones that didn't love it quit.
I learned many great lessons from my father, not the least of which was that you can fail at what you don't want. So you might as well take a chance on doing what you love.
Welcome to the most indispensable show for people doing the hard work of growing your business. It's the marketing podcast by entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs. Welcome to Grow the Dream.
All right, welcome to the Grow the Dream Show, episode 20. It's good to have you listening today, and with me in the studio, as always, is my good friend Rod Thompson. How are you?
Great, and always glad to be here.
And you know, the chair...
And I'm here, there. I'm here, too.
I was just going to say, you ruined it. I was going to say, the chair is empty. Josh is not here today.
Again. I am here. Except he is here.
He is here by the magic of technology.
The internets.
Yes. So, hey, you are actually no longer in where you were this week.
He's en route.
But you managed to stop over in a place long enough to connect up, so thank you for doing that. But Josh,
couldn't miss it.
Where you've been like the Globetrotter, so where were you this week?
I've been Globetrotting, yes. I was in San Francisco this week, paving the way for an upcoming show/product that I'm launching, which has actually been in the work for about three months, and then finally decided last minute that I needed to make the trip out there and make some waves.
So you went to like the world quarters. Wow, I need more of this caffeine. You went to the world headquarters of tech startups. Does that maybe have anything to do with the project, perhaps?
Mm-hmm. Oh, very much so. Yeah, the pitch is very, very simple. It takes like 5 seconds to explain. It's the podcast where founders come on and pitch their startups to angel investors. So there's a lot of that happens in the Valley. And
more than 5 seconds, sorry.
You're counting.
I was trying to do the 60 minutes, but that's actually a patented sound.
Oh, my gosh.
No, trademarked. Sorry. Uh-huh. It's trademarked. It's one of like 30 sounds that's been trademarked.
Fascinating.
Harley Davidson failed to get the sound of their muffler trademarked, but 60 Seconds got the stopwatch of all things trademarked. Anyway, sorry. You were explaining what it is. So it's called The Pitch, and it's going to be a podcast.
It's like Shark Tank in audio form, but less, how do I say this?
Sharky?
Yeah, it's not as dramatic. It's going to be kind of more real life.
Okay. All right.
So,
and with real, but with real VCs?
Yeah, we're going to have guest VCs on the show, and there's some other cool elements that we're kind of testing. We're going to launch next week, and we're going to officially say at the beginning of the show, this is a beta version of the show.
Of course.
So we can welcome as much feedback as possible. And
so you're going to have VCs? Are you going to have guys, entrepreneurs with ideas?
Yeah, that's the idea. Specifically, like early stage seed funding, stage of the development. So, really exciting stuff.
Tech, all tech, or is it gonna cross the spectrum?
No, we want to be open to. I think we're starting off with tech because that's kind of what's in the pipeline already. But we will see how it goes,
and I'm sure interesting.
We'll talk about little on the show whenever pertinent.
If there are people who have these ideas that might be listeners to this show.
Where do they go?
Right.
Yeah, just go to thepitch.vc. Did you know that .vc was a...
Gotta love that. A new top-level domain, .vc.
Yeah, it's technically not top-level. It's some country code. And still trying to work on Google to show up in search results in the United States. So that might be an
hopefully it won't be hijacked like that. Science has been. Wow. That
I
thing
has
turned into one big spam domain.
Really?
Oh, I've gotten slammed with it. And so I did a little research and something like what I was reading, something like 84% of the emails coming off the .science are spam.
Wow. What?
Yeah.
Wow. That's, so
it's crazy. Some days I get like 15 emails.
What?
And they're all different topics. They all look different. They all come with a different name. But if you look at the hidden domain, it's all some sort of like randomly generated URL .science.
So all the .ru people moved to .science?
Apparently so.
So, Rod, you know, there's this thing. It's called spam filtering. It's really great.
You know, the problem is that every one of these is a different .science domain. Yeah. I don't know exactly, you know, how the mechanics works behind that.
Going to have to shut down the entire email.
Well, what?
Change your address. That's it.
Yeah, that's it. I think it needs
change
to be
your name.
The email server is where it needs to be filtered out at.
Yeah. So .vc is the internet country code top level domain for St. Vincent and the Grenadines.
Am Thank I you for right? looking that up. Yes.
Maybe. St.
Yes.
Vincent. I own one from the Republic of Togo. So, you know, I like these.
It's so funny when you buy one of those, you're like supporting the country. I think the one I bought, the .vc, was like $60, which is, you know, pretty expensive when it comes to domain names, but apparently I'm supporting the country.
Well, I'm supporting some nation in Western Africa that I don't really know a lot about. And ironically, I bought it. I hope they don't listen to this show. I bought it 1 year, about 5 years ago. And the whole process, the checkout process, was in French. I wanted mrk.tg because it's like the world's shortest marketing domain.
Hey, that is pretty cool.
And I use it for URL shortener and stuff. But
you got it?
I did. I got it. And the whole checkout process was in French. I didn't know how. I'm using Google Translate on the pages while I'm, you know, I'm trying to figure out what the heck is going on. And I bought it. And then there was this email exchange where they set up the name servers and stuff. And then I kept thinking, it's about a year later, I'm supposed to renew. Never got any emails. I tried to go through some process to see if there was a way to renew. It's in French. I don't know how it works. It still works.
It still works. So you still own it? You still?
So technically, I only supported this nation once.
You bought it for life.
I guess. I don't know.
Probably they've gone through 18 governments since you bought it.
I guess so. Maybe so. I don't know.
Only nerds like you will find loopholes as detailed as that.
I know. And I'm sorry to all of you listening who don't know what the heck we're talking about.
Please come back. What? We're going to talk relevant any moment here.
Oh, yeah. We shouldn't have even used the term TLD. That's just not fair. Hey. What are we drinking today, guys? The brew of the week is important.
Bad. Yeah, no, today's brew is bad. What are you drinking on your end before we talk about us? Because you're not with us here.
Oh shoot, I shouldn't have brought it up. It's it's Starbucks.
I knew it.
I needed a caffeine fix.
That's funny.
Fast.
Well, ours is worse. I actually didn't see what kind of K cup.
It's the morning blend.
The morning blend. Yeah.
So oh, guys,
it's as basic
day.
As coffee gets.
We didn't have time to fire up the French press.
I was most of the way through my pot earlier this morning, though. So
yeah, and I had my pour over at home. So, you know, I mean, it's sweet.
A pour over?
Well, a couple of them.
Okay.
I don't remember how many.
Okay.
Poor listeners are these guys are losing it. They're falling apart at the seams.
Well, I think we need to do for the brew of the week. Here's what we need to do. We need to hear from listeners. Like you tried to, you know, you brought this up last week, Josh. You know, we need to hear from listeners. What are you drinking? That is like an amazing brew. But we also need some coffee companies to step up. Come on, it's free publicity, man.
Really?
We talk about if you mail us beans, we'll drink them
and
on air.
We actually have proven results.
It's true.
Yes.
I mean, we've had a couple of coffee companies that have benefited from our.
Yes.
Yeah. So if you
got a jingle.
Oh, here we go. Josh's jingles.
Okay.
Coffee cult. Coffee, coffee cult. Coffee cult.
And now, see, we have to slice this out and send it to them.
I just don't know what to do with that.
I just was going to mention that they got publicity.
And now we did that.
Yeah, now we did that. Yep. Which is available on Amazon if you're listening. So, okay. So, Josh, you're out there. Let's hear about how this pitch thing really kind of got started, because I have a feeling that maybe some relationship building that you've been doing around the Daily Hunt maybe had something to do with this. Am I in the neighborhood at all?
Yeah. I mean, a couple episodes we talked about, this is episode 17, relationship building as a growth strategy, I believe is something similar to what we titled it. And
build relationships to propel growth?
That sounds
like
right.
That.
Yeah.
That sounds like something I might write. I don't know.
You're always there to correct me. Thank you, Roger.
Love you, Josh, you know?
Yeah. It's So, I mean, everything that the Daily Hunt is essentially put together all of those relationships that I would have needed if I ever wanted to build the pitch. If I wanted to create the pitch 3 months ago, I wouldn't have known where to start, who to talk to. It just wasn't possible. So partially networking is what made the business possible in the first place, but we've kind of just continued along that thread. And before even launching, you know, we're getting feedback on the idea, looking for people to kind of commit to participate, actually trying to do essentially customer development on this idea before launching, before showing anything to the public, which is in some ways counterintuitive. What do you guys think? Have you guys ever done anything like this?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you're talking about this, because a lot of businesses, and this happens in any size business, from the smallest of the small on up to the biggest of the big, right? But a lot of times we just build a new product or we build a new service, we create something, we don't bother to find out if anybody really wants it. We kind of use our own assumptions about this. I'm looking at you, Coca-Cola.
Can you say New Coke?
1985 or 86.
Golly, was it that long ago?
It was.
Oh, my goodness.
That long ago. And
it still lives on in infamy.
Oh, it was just
1941 and 1986 or whatever.
The days that will live in infamy. So yeah, New Coke. Do you know the story, Josh?
No, I mean, there's a new Coke out now called Coke Life that's half stevia and half regular sugar.
And that would not be what we mean.
That's actually terrific. That one, it's got a green label, and it's like it's less calories and it tastes better. And anyway, completely irrelevant.
So here's the story, Josh. In 1985, Coca-Cola decided, you know, we've had this formula for 100 years. Let's ditch it in favor of some new formula. And they actually rolled out, without bothering to apparently ask anyone, a new formula for Coca-Cola, and they replaced Coca-Cola. And they just called the new version Coke.
I thought they called it New Coke.
Well, that was the unofficial name that we all called it, because we hated it, so we called it New Coke. But the can actually just said Coke on it. Right? Hmm. So they rolled it out, and
Coke drinkers despised it, and there was a revolution.
Oh, it bombed so badly, and the cost of this thing was measured in the billions of dollars. By the time they rolled it out, they removed the original Coke formula from the market, and then months later, they had to roll out what they called Coca-Cola Classic, which was supposedly the original formula, but in fact, little known fact, it was not.
Oh.
The original sweetener had been changed from sugar
to high fructose corn syrup.
And that's why, Rod, when you're in Haiti and you get a Coke, have you had a Coke in Haiti?
Oh, yeah.
They grow sugar cane down there, so they never switched.
Right.
Because corn is more expensive than sugar for them.
Right.
Guys, you can still get this. I buy the Mexican Coke.
Oh, yeah, you can. It's true.
From Publix, and it's delicious.
But you know, most people are not aware.
That's what I'm saying. That one that you mentioned earlier, the Life one or whatever, that has stevia and pure cane sugar. So, anyway.
Yeah, it's not very good, though.
That's nice. Yeah, so I don't remember the cost, but it was measured in the billions of dollars, and it was a major, major disaster.
So one of the problems there is they didn't know their market ahead of time, which seems like a blunder beyond measurement for a company of the success and size of Coca-Cola. But they didn't figure out really what their market wanted before they launched a product, which is, I think, something that an awful lot of companies probably do, and we've all probably done to some degree. And the lesson that we can all learn is actually there's real value in being able to and taking the time to test a product before you launch it into the market.
Well, you can actually use this same strategy to breathe new life into your existing business, but this is maybe kind of moving ahead a little bit.
Well, yeah. So you're getting some feedback now. And actually, this is a popular internet marketing strategy. When I say internet marketing, just to be clear, for a business owner listening, there are two universes that respond when you say internet marketing. And they are completely no bridge shall.
That's right. There's no Venn diagram that captures them both.
Exactly. Thank you. You bailed me out of that because it was not working. So when you say internet marketing, and the average person who may own a business or not just thinks marketing that's done on the internet, right? But to someone who is immersed in the world of internet marketing, it's this universe of affiliate marketing, information products, promotional stuff out the wazoo. And I mean, there's this literally a universe. And that universe has been using what they call the product launch formula in one version or another. There are many iterations of this thing for many years now. And it's very much the same idea. They go to people who are trusted affiliates, partners, people that they feel like can help them promote. They get early feedback. They allow early access. And then when they set a target date and they say, okay, on this date, we're going to go live, and everybody's going to send emails to their databases on the same day.
Right. They'll blog it. They'll video it. They'll podcast about it. Any number of outlets like that.
Yep.
Oftentimes the people will have created an email list ahead of time. They will have done actual content marketing ahead of time by releasing a certain degree of valuable content.
Sure. Yeah.
To attract more attention. And all this builds up to a launch window.
It's true. And the publishing industry has also caught on, and in fact may have even driven early versions of this, because
I think they probably had the concept before. Even.
Book launches work right. This way, right? Yeah, where
it's just far more advanced now.
Yeah, exactly. And it's far more technical now.
And a lot more people can do it now.
You can do it.
Yes.
You know, anybody
can do it. Difference. Yeah. It's almost democratized now.
Yeah, it is. So Josh, that's the kind of thing that you're talking about here, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it kind of depends, guys, on what we really want to focus on for this episode. You know, what's going to be the most applicable, version of this story to kind of go down. For me, you know, this is like an information product. This is an entertaining show. But I think what you alluded to, the formula, David, I'm curious, what is the formula exactly? I think I just know the formula because I've heard it used in different ways. People have actually, but do you know the actual formula, what it is?
Well, there are variations on this theme, but they all more or less involve the same stuff. So like Rod pointed out, rolling out an early version, right?
Right.
And maybe even slicing up a piece of content. Most
exactly.
All the time that we're talking about with these product launches, it's an information product within the information and internet marketing world. So by information product, we mean it's a training course, it's downloadable stuff, it's digital content of some kind. So they'll take a little piece of their product and start to drip it out. And they'll use their affiliates to do that and so forth. And their affiliates are, when I say affiliate, that has a very specific meaning within this world. That means someone who's going to make money when you sell your product because they're helping you promote. So those affiliates, you know, a lot of it is recruiting the affiliates, frankly. It's all about recruiting the affiliates and trying to time the marketing so that everything pushes out on the same day at the same time to make as big a splash as possible.
Right.
And there, like I said, different experts, quote unquote, I'm using air quotes, will have their version of these events. But ultimately, it comes down to rolling out a taste test, so to speak, a little sample, collecting emails, using affiliates who you've incentivized in some way to promote by giving them a piece of the action, which is all done with tracking software that makes that all possible today, and then coordinating the timing. And it usually takes months of preparation to really pull off a successful one.
Right. Maybe even if I could give an example of one that I'm aware of.
Yeah, do it.
Because it was my son Colin has a did this with sightreadingacademy.com, which is he's a pianist and an entrepreneur and a piano teacher. And so one of the things that he felt like was missing was the ability to teach students how to sight read, a real valuable commodity for musicians. And so he developed a whole program that could do that with the help of an engineer, I think a VA somewhere engineer that helped him create that software for it. And then he did a multi-month, it was longer than he was expecting, I think, pre-launch to it, which built up affiliates all over the world. And it's personal relationships he built up with people, you know, bloggers in Australia and whatnot, that were all into this type of thing, a very small slice, but then also with piano teachers and with piano teaching organizations all around the world, all around the
like
country.
Studios where
and individual
kids might go
studios.
To learn.
Exactly. Yeah. Because he teaches at studios. He's got like, I don't know, 35 or 40 students in LA. And so, you know, he did all of this. He built it all up ahead of time. He was giving out content. He was building his email list while he was providing little pieces, little snippets of video about here's what you will learn, here's what you can learn, give out little tips. So there was value that he kept streaming out to these people all the time, and he kept building it up and building it up.
And can I insert?
Yeah.
It's really good stuff. I mean, I'm a pianist. I've been for many years. And sight reading, as many people will tell you, is one of the areas where people suffer. Even if they might be really accomplished as musicians, sight reading is tricky. So for him to roll out a system that really gets results, and I've seen some of the video, I didn't actually buy the product, but I saw some of the advanced stuff. It's really, really good. And well, by the way, are not affiliates of Collins.
No. No, we're not. But that's good to hear, because that was his experience too, was sight reading was really challenging and he didn't feel like he got a good kickoff on it. So
most teachers don't do as well a job with
and
this.
And so teachers have been very – so he found a market there ahead of time, and he knew because of his experience, but also then because of all of the pre-launch stuff, he realized how much market there was there for it, how much interest there was, which I think made him spend more time actually on the pre-launch because he could see the value in it, and it built it up more. And so when he actually launched just a couple months ago, it was just a small window, and he might correct me on this, I think it was just a few weeks in which you could get the particularly good deal.
That's another key is on the
you
launch.
You limit that window.
Discount. Yeah.
And you're offering something special, either a lower price or perhaps some bonus things that
bonus
are not going to be available, exclusive, limited time window stuff, right?
Yep. And I believe he surpassed his goals on it. So it was very exciting how that worked out for him. So there's very practical examples there.
And you can see traces of his work if you Google Sight Reading Academy.
Right.
First thing that you see, of course, is his website with a nice presence in Google there. But then you see reviews. You see other websites with blog posts where they're writing about this. And presumably, some of those people are these relationships that Colin built.
Right.
And they're all there, highly visible. And so what that does, though, is when you Google this product, let's say you hear about it, however it is that you hear about it.
Or you just think, I need help with sight reading, and maybe you just Google sight reading, piano sight reading.
So there,
I don't know.
There you go. But when you find this, not only do you find his website where he's going to sell you his solution, but you're also finding social proof about it because of these other bloggers have written about it. And these are influencers, of course, that have their own visibility and whatnot. So it's multiple benefits from this type of strategy because then it allows you to have some validation from third parties.
Right.
Hey, this is really cool stuff. I actually didn't know this story, so thanks for sharing that, Rod.
Yeah.
What would we say to the typical business owner listening who's like, well, I don't want to do an informational product. I get why I might want to do information and blogging and content marketing to help drive traffic to my main business. But, you know, kind of like, what does this mean for me? I don't want to do an information product. That doesn't sound fun. Like, is there a way to apply kind of the principles of this launch strategy to a more standardized business?
Sure.
So, but maybe a product. We could do a product, but maybe it's not.
So
an information product per se.
So products are easy to some degree, depending on what the product is, because if you have a way to give people a trial of some kind, maybe if Coca-Cola, and of course Coca-Cola did taste tests. In fact, this was the days of the Cola War, right? So Cola Wars, where they were up against Pepsi all the time. They actually did some taste testing. But there's it's well documented why their research was flawed. They actually did have some data to suggest that it was going to work, but it was poorly done. So if you can offer people a bite-sized sample of some kind of your product or a trial period. So here's an example. There's a mattress company on the market right now that basically says the way you buy mattresses is wrong. You go into the mattress store, you lay on the mattress. They invite you to take a free 2-hour nap or whatever they might do, but you can only test it in the store for a little while.
Right.
So this mattress company, who I think should probably sponsor our show at this point, and I'm not going to name their name as a result of that, and so they can contact us. But anyway, what they do is they actually ship the mattress to you, and they give you, it's either 3 or 4 months to test it out.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
You sleep on it at night.
That's a whole different kind of content marketing right there.
It is. It's a sample of their product.
Yes.
So you've bought it, so to speak, but it's a risk-free trial. You can return it at any point in time. You call them up and they'll come get it. And or they send UPS or however it works. And it's a thing that's they created this magical means of shipping it, so it's small. You can carry it upstairs and do all this other stuff. But when you're ready to use it, you open the box and poof, out it unfolds or does whatever it does.
Really?
And yeah, it comes out, and it's and so it's easy to transport as a result.
Right.
So that's another thing that they did. So there are a few different innovations in there that make this whole concept a little bit different, but it's a way for you to allow someone to try the product. Now, an information product, that's easy because you just slice out
right.
a portion of a video or a downloadable section of a course or however that
right.
part
but
works.
But hard tangible products offer a whole different challenge.
So if you have a product that people can actually consume in some way, then you give them a small enough amount that they can find out if it's really something they want or not. In the case of this mattress company, there are a couple of things that are really bold about this. One is, they're using a risk reversal technique in the process. So the risk reversal technique is just a fancy term for transferring the risk from the buyer to the seller. And so if I'm selling a product, what I'm saying to you, Rod, is look, if you like this, after 120 days, you keep it. If you don't like it, just send it back and I'll refund you fully. So now I'm assuming the risk rather than you assuming the risk. And that risk reduction in the mind of the buyer
right.
makes them more inclined to try it.
Right.
And, you know, there's evidence to suggest, I mean, retailers will tell you if someone touches a product, they're 30% more likely to purchase it. Right. So
once they've slept on it for a while, I mean,
are you guys talking about bed in a box? Are we skirting around this? Is it called bed in a box?
Nope.
Oh, because I have bed in box and I love them. Anyway.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So, Josh, reach out to them, see if they'll sponsor our show.
Yeah, since we've been talking about a competitor here, sure.
It is seriously is cool, though, when you unwrap that thing and just magically.
Now, that could be another name for the mattress company I'm thinking of, but you never know. So, but that's an example. Service companies can do the same thing, and this is a well-documented method for selling carpet cleaning, but you know how these guys do it? Will come clean 10 square feet or 100 yep. square feet or whatever it is for free.
Right.
Yeah.
And, of course, they pick the 100 square feet in the middle of the floor. So,
right.
So now you have, like, a big clean spot.
Right. So, like, well, now I got to do the rest.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you don't want to leave this room this way, do you? You know?
Right.
Then they do a little toothbrush of some grout, and they're just like, oh, this is kind of dirty. Oh, wow. Yeah, that really worked.
Wow. That dirty.
I'll see you guys later.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, do you want to buy now? So.
But then, okay, how about another example? How about a coffee maker? You know, there's all sorts of the little coffee bistro places out there now, like Coffee Cult. You know, I imagine that the same concept could apply to them too.
Sure. You know? They could do a sampling program where they send you out like half a pound or a quarter pound or some small amount enough
right.
to make it. And then they send you a coupon for
right.
a full pound or
Absolutely.
However they sell it. Sure. So products in some ways are easier than services in this regard because, you know, you can find a way to give people a test, a trial,
yeah.
a portion, or whatever it is. Now, again, there are some products where this just doesn't work. You know, if you
right.
sell a large piece of equipment that, you know, has to be manufactured or whatever, sure, you can offer a guarantee or a warranty or something, but you're not able to just – it's much more expensive to do a trial in that scenario.
Well, let's say a car. Cars might not work for a two-month trial.
Okay, two
Otherwise,
months, no?
I'm just going to take two-month trials and just go to all the different dealerships.
But this is the puppy dog close. Every dealership
Ooh,
will
a
let
car,
you...
car, that's a tough one.
That's what
no,
I'm saying.
No, everybody will let you drive it home. I mean, they'll let you take the keys,
oh,
drive it home for the night. Now, is it a two-month trial? No, but it's overnight.
True.
And
that's
they
true.
All know that it increases the likelihood you're going to buy the thing.
Right.
Because they don't offer it until they already see the look in your eye
right.
that says
right.
you really want it, don't you?
Right.
You know? So, yeah, we'll be glad. We'll keep your old beater here,
right.
you know, overnight. No problem. Just leave it on our lot, you know, and then you can drive it. So that's the classic puppy dog close.
I have a theory, guys. I want to hear what you think of this. This is kind of going in a different direction with this idea. But the whole idea of this is you've got test beta users, right? Whether it's public or private, you're getting feedback kind of before you really say, hey, here's my product in its beautiful finalized form. You're kind of saying, hey, here's my product in its halfway decent form. What do you think of it here? What do you want me to build? That sort of thing. But what if somebody takes their existing business and maybe it's not as profitable as they would like. Maybe they're like, I want to do something new. I want to launch. I want to do a big splash. But I've got this existing business. What do I do? What would you guys say it? This is kind of building off of the 80-20 rule. Take 20% of your best customers, and you know who those people are. They're the most profitable customers, those relationships that you value the most, and they actually take the least of your time, right? Those are your favorites, and you know who they are depending on your business. And then the 80% of those people that don't make you very much money and take most of your time. look at those 20%, if you've got an existing customer base, and talk to them specifically about creating this new product and get their feedback. So instead of building it for the 80% that doesn't really work for you, build something for the 20%. And then as you're building it, you know, have a private beta, give them updates along the way so like they feel like they're a part of the process of what you're building before it's created. They'll take ownership of your product and become some of the greatest cheerleaders, the greatest sponsors, I guess the correct word is evangelizers for what you're building. What do you guys think about that?
Well, that's actually, I think, a little bit akin to the pre-launch concept, really. I mean, you're playing right off that. That would be like a cousin to it, I would think.
I was hoping that they would sound, that was my intention.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a nice way to translate something that's working in that other space over into the space that you're, you know, maybe working in offline or in a less digital world, you know, where it's your product or your service has to be consumed. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think this is brilliant. Another thing that you can do, and this applies no matter what type of business that you're in, is you can run what we call an ask campaign. And of course, you have to have a database, an email list, in order for this to work. But it can work two ways. One is you roll out the idea and say, look, if there were a product that did X, Y, and Z, or if there were a service that provided such and such and such and such, how likely is it that you would find that valuable or interesting or whatever? Mm-hmm. And then you let them rate it 1 to 5. It's a one question response, mm-hmm. right? So that there's no survey. It's just a, you know, rate it 1 to 5 or say yes or no. You know, you keep it really stupid simple. And that's a very interesting way. Now, the problem with this is what people say that they're interested in and what they actually purchase are often two different things. But this is at least an early way to test the idea,
sure,
the concept. And the other version of that ask campaign, and this applies especially if what you do involves selling your expertise in any way. So you're providing a service. Rod, you know, you provide messaging and communication strategy for people, and you also do work to help them get visibility in the press, right?
Right.
So you're heavily dependent upon your expertise in order for your credibility, right? For people to buy from you, right? So one of the things that you can do is you could send out an email and say, what's your biggest single question about this category in your business that you serve? So when you ask the question, you would describe it this way. You would say, you'd just send out a one question thing to your email list, and you'd say, you know, what's your biggest single question about
how to get publicity?
How to get publicity? Mm-hmm. And then you send them to how you get them to respond is another thing. But you can send them to a survey tool, or you can send them to like a Google Forms. I mean, Google Forms has a fantastic tool for surveying.
Okay,
and it you keep it really stupid simple. It's free. I mean, it's just easy.
I'm going to butt in here and recommend a different one. You guys have to try out Typeform. It's the best survey tool I've ever used. Beautiful interface. I get way more people actually filling out my forms ever since I've switched to Typeform.
Sweet.
Side note, keep going.
Okay. And then, this is the reason I like Google Sheets or Google Forms, because it puts the data in Google Sheets where it's easily searched. So you can then kind of do things like create a word cloud of the most frequently used words in your responses. So depending on how big your email is, look, if it's only a couple hundred people, then you're not going to get that many responses. You might get 20 responses out of 200, right? But if you have an email list that's 20 or 30,000, then that's a whole different problem, right? How do you filter through those responses? So you need to be able to do some sort of analysis, mm-hmm, on the data that comes back to just see which words got used most often, you know? So maybe Typeform does that, Josh. I don't know. I haven't tried it yet.
It does have an integration.
But oh, that's cool. Yeah. That's awesome. So that way you're literally going to your established people and you're giving them a chance to respond. So this is kind of a digital version, but Josh, it's kind of the same idea in that you're seeking out feedback from trusted. Look, your customers are going to give you the best feedback.
Have you guys heard of the Net Promoter Score?
Yep.
Have you used that with any of your clients?
I've never used it. I mean, I love the concept of it, but it's a similar idea. I mean, it's basically a one question survey.
Yeah. Well, let me just describe it for our listeners who maybe don't know. It's getting a lot of traction in the tech industry because it's low touch. Like, it doesn't take much from the user. It's even easier than a form because really all they do is click one button. And once they click that one button, it sends that information to you and you can kind of follow up in a personal way. So if they say, basically the question is, how likely, you've seen this before, I'm sure.
Oh yeah.
How likely are you to recommend our product to a friend? And it's a scale of 1 to 10. I don't know why it's 1 to 10, not 1 to 5. Who knows? But, and then you just click the one.
Most of the times I've seen, it's actually 0 to 10.
0 to 10. Good point.
Yeah.
So whichever one you click, they can have set up so that they're going to get noted. As a business owner, you can get notified if somebody clicks a one, anything below a 5, for example, or anything below whatever your criteria is. And then you can actually follow up with them. So it's a great tool where you're not asking your entire audience, hey, what's wrong with our product that maybe we can fix, which can be awkward if they're like, oh, no, I actually love your product. Why are you asking me that? It's a great way to only have to have the conversations with the people that are having issues with your product. And then you can do the reverse for the people who are like, I love your product. Then you can ask them, hey, would you mind leaving us a review? Would you mind sharing this on Facebook? That sort of thing.
Yep.
But it's a real, I don't know. I'd love to see some results from this from some of our listeners in their businesses.
Net Promoter Score is cool. And you can also hook it to, as you said, you can either follow up with them individually or you can hook it to some automation. So like, for example, within a product like, let's say, Infusionsoft or was it ActiveCampaign that we had on as a guest? Mm-hmm. With those, you can hook them up so that the correct steps happen next, depending on which one they clicked. What number it is. So that's a really cool idea. Plus, it gives you a gauge, and because it's only one question, there's low friction.
Right. Yeah. But these are valuable tools, in being able to measure your product before you launch. Still,
You got to laugh. This whole episode has gone from how to do a pre-launch of an info product to, hey, you should be asking for feedback from your customers, which is full circle, but it's kind of along the same thing. I'm just kind of, This is funny.
No, but hopefully it's valuable too.
Well, and it does go back to the idea of relationships, right? If you ask people that are really close to you, friends, family, staff, for feedback about something, you're not likely to get unbiased, useful feedback at all.
Yeah. Oh, not at all.
Because, depending on the culture of your company, they may or may not have the ability to tell you what they really think. And so you need to go to people that you can trust will give you useful feedback, not just good feedback. I said good earlier. You know, your customers will hopefully give you useful feedback.
Yeah, you really do need to get out of your initial circle, find new prospects you haven't had interaction with before, and get feedback from them or existing customers that are outside of your close network of friends and family.
Yeah. So that's good stuff. So, like you said, I'm not sure how much it has to do with where we set out to go today.
Yeah.
But never know with these conversations. You never know what's going to come up.
Right.
I know. We may have just shot ourselves in the foot by covering a great topic that we could have given an entire episode to. But
actually, I found actually some of it kind of useful. So I'm hoping that our listeners did too.
Absolutely. I think it's good. Useful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Rob found it useful. It must be useful.
Exactly. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. So speaking of entire episodes and really useful episodes.
Boom, boom, boom.
Next week. Thank you, Josh. I appreciate that little jingle there. Not that it was really a jingle, but yeah. Next week, we have an amazing guest. We've teased him. Josh called him a whale last week, which was kind of funny.
The whale of a guest.
We aren't actually teasing the guest. We're teasing the audience about the guest. Never mind. But we have a really great guest next week whose name we probably still are not going to mention today.
Are we
going to mention his name? Should we mention his name?
I think we should.
Should we tell everybody that we have Jonah Berger next week?
Yeah. Maybe not then.
Yay! Jonah is the author of the New York Times bestseller Contagious, Why Things Take Off. And I'm sure he'll tell us the quick version of the story next week. But that book is so phenomenal. He's not Harvard, but he's a Wharton School of Business professor. Yeah, I got to get that straight.
Yeah, there's a little difference there. But
you
Wharton,
you work
highly
that out
respected.
Right now, not live next week.
Yeah, you Penn would probably be unhappy with me for mentioning Harvard in this in this context. But anyway, Wharton School of Business professor of marketing. He's still a relatively young guy.
He looks a lot younger than he is.
True. And but they spent, he and his team, they actually conducted 10 years worth of research on virality, meaning what causes stuff to take off on the internet, especially because that's kind of the neat place to get data from.
Right.
But for example, they looked at the New York Times articles that were the most shared. So not just which ones got read the most, but which ones did people share with others the most.
Really deep interaction in that respect.
Same kind of thing with YouTube videos, which ones took off. And they had this major, major, major data set of stuff. And then they began to break it down into why does something really catch on?
Mm-hmm.
And that is the subject of the book. It is an amazing book. And Josh, you're reading it, right?
I am, and it's the reason why I like to keep talking about this show as being Marketing Mondays.
Yeah.
Your Mondays for the Grow the Dream Show. And it's from the first chapter in this book where it talks about triggers. And even if you just read that one chapter, if you're that kind of person that doesn't finish books, which I might be describing myself right now, that one chapter—
may or may not be.
Yeah, really just changed the way I think about, it gave me a new perspective or a new option for messaging, and I might be a little bit too focused on that one right now just because
that's because you haven't finished the book.
Yeah, I know, I need to get a more evenly distributed set of information.
It's a fun book. He's broken it down into, I hesitate to call it a formula because not everything is going to take off, no matter what you try to do to it. But if you understand the psychology or the logistics behind why things do tend to take off.
So much of marketing is psychology.
You can engineer the product itself, the service itself, or in some practical cases, he talks about a restaurant that opened.
You know what? Actually, now that I think about it, this week's podcast is not a bad lead up to him.
We're kind of teeing it up, aren't we?
We really are. We completely bungled into it, but we'll take it.
It was unplanned. We'd like to say we were that brilliant. But no, he's a fantastic guest. As I mentioned previously, I've heard him speak, and I've downloaded materials. I got stuff like clients. We've actually literally used that book as almost a guidebook, a textbook, to redesign products and to think about product launches, and also to think about content marketing, which is why I think it's so fascinating for next week for this show, because even if you're not launching a new product or service, or your business is already off the ground, or whatever. You can use the ideas that Jonah's going to be talking about to help your content take off, which, as we all know, in turn, increases the likelihood that your product, your service, your business is going to be seen by people. And hopefully the right people.
Right. I can't wait, guys. I'm excited.
Too. Yeah, that's going to be a really fun show. This has been a fun show. I've enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, so, all right. So, Josh, you spent your week in San Francisco. You're working on the pitch. Did you build some new relationships while you're out there?
I did, absolutely. We actually had a lot of fun too. So this is a weird thing, total side topic. I've heard of things called silent discos, but I've never actually seen one.
I saw this on Facebook when you posted it. So
yeah, and perhaps we should share it from the Grow the Dream Show page just for posterity's sake. But just a fascinating. I mean, imagine yourself at a park in the middle of the day, 4 o'clock. And there's a bunch of people dancing with headphones on. And then out of nowhere, they all scream, yay! And you're like, what in the world happened? All at the same time.
So they're dancing like, are they kind of synchronized in their dancing? Or are they each like dancing?
No, 100%. It's the wildest thing. And it doesn't run off of FM radio, but something similar to that, where everyone's headphones is listening to the same thing. And there's a DJ and everything.
So if you're at the park and you're not in the know, you're kind of wondering what the heck is going on because there's no music playing that you can hear.
it was really pretty cool. And you're outside in the park and you know, getting sun. That's healthy.
Well, what's kind of cool about it, too, is if you don't want to hear somebody else's music blasting, you don't have to. You could actually still sort of enjoy being out in the park without being bombarded by their beat.
The only awkward thing, I did not have headphones on, so I was kind of outside the loop, but I saw people trying to communicate with each other on the dance floor, and even on a normal disco, you can kind of yell over the music enough to get your point across. People were having a lot of trouble communicating with each other.
That's funny.
They were using hand motions and stuff, and, you know, it was all fun, but...
So is this the California VC culture? Is this what they do at 4 o'clock?
They go out and have a silent disco.
It's Dolores Park. I just happened to be there when they reopened half of the park after it was closed for an entire year. And it's crazy. It's like the entire city, this little, the mission. Everybody from around there was like, this is the event to be at. The park's reopening. And it was absolutely gorgeous. But they planned a party with the silent disco. And what's funny is it was invite only. You had to respond to go to the silent disco, but it was in a public place. So really, you were just responding to get the headphones, but everybody else could kind of go and watch.
Oh, so you couldn't take your own headphones?
No, it was some very secretive channel that this was being broadcasted on. I've got plenty of stories from the week. I'm still kind of trying to recover from the jet lag, but that was the most interesting and unique for me.
Well, we'll let you absorb those stories now as you continue your return back.
And then share them with us on an upcoming episode, perhaps.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe it was kind of a blur. Who knows if I'll remember it all.
All right. Well, this has been a great show, guys, and we appreciate you listening that are listening to the show today. We want to hear your thoughts about product launches, service launches that may have gone well, maybe not so well, lessons you may have learned. Mm-hmm. What'd you find interesting today? You can visit us at GTD. That's our Twitter account. I don't know what I'm thinking here. Visit us at growthedream.com/shows/020, because this is the 20th episode. So shows/020. That'll get you to today's episode. You can leave us a comment, ask questions, whatever. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. In both cases, the URL ends with GTD Show. And that's a great place to find us. If you want to ask questions, suggest topics, we want to hear from you about that as well. There are places to do that on the website. We'd be glad to hear from you. GrowTheDream.com/show is where you can find all of the archived episodes. And you can find Rod Thompson on Twitter at Rod_Thompson with no P. Mm-hmm. And on the web at Thompson PR, where there is a P in PR. And Josh, you can find on Twitter at Josh Muccio.
Hey, I gotta cut you off. If you guys are getting ready for next week's episode with Jonah Berger, you've got to go to audible.com or freeaudibletrial.com.
It's audibletrial.com/dream.
Gosh dang it. and download his book so that when you come to listen to his episode, you will have heard some of the content from his book.
Why not? You can get a free copy of his book, which, by the way, I've now purchased it in hardcover. I've purchased it on the Kindle, and I also have the Audible version of this book. It's just one of those, I guess I've really supported this book in multiple
apparently so.
But each time I needed it for a different reason. But yeah, you can visit audibletrial.com/dream. They'll give you a free 30-day trial of the service and a free copy of that book or the audiobook of your choice. So there we go. Hey, I've enjoyed it. We'll look forward to talking to you next week with Jonah Berger himself. See you then.
Peace.
Thanks for listening to the Grow the Dream Show. We invite you to subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app. Get connected to our growing community, add your comments, ask questions, and listen to the archives on the web at growthedream.com/show.